Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg, and welcome again to Extension 720. A former U.S. senator is with us tonight who disagrees strongly with the new plan for space exploration developed by the Obama administration. That former senator happens also to be an astronaut and one of the two men who last walked on the moon. Our guest is Harrison Schmitt, former NASA astronaut, U.S. senator, representing New Mexico, 1977 to 83, professor of engineering physics, adjunct professor at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and our guest tonight as we discuss the abandonment of the moon mission, and particularly the sacrifice of the Constellation program, of which Harrison Schmitt was one of the basic designers. On to that conversation directly after the update on this evening's news from Paula Cooper.
You're listening to Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
And it is a great pleasure to welcome to the program Harrison Schmitt, Dr. Harrison Schmitt, professor, astronaut, member of the U.S. Senate for 6 years. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you, Mel?
Well, I'm fine, and I'm very eager to talk with you about the proposal put forward by the president, speaking, I guess, for the new NASA administration, which essentially abandons our mission on or our return to the moon, something which you advocated for some time.
Well, if Congress approves the proposal, certainly it would do that. I must correct one thing I heard you say in the introduction, though, Milt. I did not have anything to do with the design of the Constellation program. It certainly conceptually went in a direction that I thought was appropriate.
What made me think that you did is that you were the chairman, I gather, of the advisory council of NASA for 3 years fairly recently.
Yeah, the NASA Advisory Council reports directly to the administrator, and its purpose is to advise on the implementation of the presidential and congressional directives relative to space policy. But I don't think it's safe to say that we got into the specifics of the design. If we had seen, or one of our committees had seen, a design that we thought was flawed, well, we'd certainly bring that to the attention of the administrator. But the responsibility for the design of the Constellation program is almost
sure.
Totally the responsibility of Mike Griffin, the former NASA administrator, and his chief lieutenants. A remarkable program it was. The only problem was that the Bush administration, on the one hand, never adequately budgeted for the program that Bush had asked to be implemented, and so it had to be slipped. The schedules had to be slipped in order to continue to implement the program. And Congress also contributed by, one, not recognizing that it was under-budgeted, and also by these continuing resolutions I'm sure you've heard about.
Yes, indeed.
Each one of which basically results in a cut due to inflation.
I know two things. First, that you were the author of a book published a few years ago in 2006, titled Return to the Moon, Exploration, Enterprise, and Energy in the Human Settlement of Space. Clearly, you want to go back to the moon. You probably have some nostalgia for it. You're, after all, one of the few people who ever walked on the moon.
I do, and that book is a basically a business plan for an investor-based initiative that would take us back to the moon specifically to harvest its energy resources. It is not an alternative to what America needs, I believe, and that is a continuing strong geopolitical presence in space. Those are two different approaches.
Mm-hmm.
One is a private enterprise approach, and not unlike in concept to what operates most of the communication satellites that we have. The other, of course, is a national approach that relates directly to the constitutional responsibility that the government has for our common defense.
Well, let's return to both of those themes in a moment, but let me note something else as well. You are a signatory to a letter to the president signed by, I think, about 20 other people associated with moon missions one way or another. Among them, Walter Cunningham, Vance Brand, Alfred Warden, Alan Bean, Scott Carpenter, Mercury astronaut way back at the very beginning of it all. Charlie Duke, let me see, Frank Borman, and yourself, Harrison Schmitt, Gene Cernan, who walked with you on the moon, did he not?
Yes.
And Dick Gordon. Those are not all, those are some of the signatories. What brings you all together on this?
Well, we would argue probably some of the details of even the Constellation program, because we're engineers or scientists or a combination of the two, and have very strong technical opinions about various subjects. But I think what brings us together on this is the feeling that the Obama administration and the president himself wish to abandon a preeminent role for America in space and to cede the moon basically to China. He doesn't say that, but that will be the net effect of if his promises are fulfilled, and to cede the International Space Station basically to the control of Russia. And we just don't think that that's appropriate for a country like the United States that has a primary responsibility on this planet of protecting democratic republics and free people.
How do China and Russia become the recipients of those particular benefits?
Well if we're not competing in deep space, or even in being able to take our own astronauts to the space station, then we have basically removed ourselves from the field. And we know for sure that China is very ambitious in almost every area of human endeavor, except freedom. And that they are moving toward, by their own admission, towards a strong presence in space, and indeed a rocket that would be able to reach the moon of the Saturn V class that we used in Apollo. Russia, on the other hand, is not quite so ambitious, but they do have the only means, once the space shuttle is retired, late this year or next year, they have the only means for us to take astronauts to the space station. Now,
and
how
we,
do you like that kettle of fish?
We have given up any plan to replace the shuttle with a more modern vehicle?
Well, that's the Constellation program. It
there
is still
are.
The national policy, because Congress hasn't reversed it. But that's what the president and his minions want to do, and that is to leave us totally dependent for access to near-Earth space on the Russians, and to do nothing significant at all in order to take us into deep space.
And they will charge us some $50 million per passenger.
Well, that's the current contract, but they've already announced publicly that in 2013, I believe it is, when the new contract is required, that the price is going up. And they can raise the price anytime, as
of
long
course.
As they are the only way to get there.
If they're the only taxi in town, so to speak.
Yeah, unless we want to just abandon the space station and then they take it over totally.
Well, hasn't
the
president...
basically have control to... they control our access, and a lot of people don't realize it is that by contract, they're controlling the access of other nations because we're responsible for other nations' access to the station.
Now, counterbalancing all of this, one should note that President Obama, in his speech down at Cape Canaveral just a few days ago, made very clear that he didn't want to abandon space. He thought the moon thing was sort of old pie and old hat, and there are greater challenges, and Mars is the great challenge, and that's where we're going, possibly within, he expects, within his own lifetime.
Well, we'll see. I don't think we'll do it within his lifetime if we don't go to the moon first. The moon is the fastest way to get to Mars.
How so?
Well, primarily because it gives us a chance to learn a lot of things about how to operate in deep space again. We have gone through two or three generations of young men and women in this country without any experience in working in deep space. And the moon gives us at least, from an operational point of view, a way to learn those and to exercise those muscles again, to learn how to do it. It's not easy. It is very difficult to work at those distances from the Earth. The moon also provides a way in which we can simulate some of the very difficult operational activities that are are inherent in a mission to Mars. For example, you don't have direct communications with instant communications with the Earth, as we do on the moon, but you can simulate those kind of things. On top of all of that, there are the resources of the moon. That's really what bothers me, is abandoning the energy resources of the moon, which ultimately will be very important to us here on Earth.
That leads us, among other things,
abandoning those to China. And so China controls those as Saudi Arabia controls oil.
I was about to say that leads us directly to a very particular element helium-3, and a great significance in terms of our energy problems. I'm about to pause for a quick round of commercials. When we return, let's talk about the energy advantage that can be developed if we go back to the moon with a serious commitment. Directly back to Senator Harrison Schmidt after we pause for these words.
This is Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Senator Harrison Schmidt, he was senator representing New Mexico in the U.S. Senate from 1977 to 1983. He was, of course, one of the major figures in the NASA Apollo mission program and walked on the moon in 1972 and has been on and off adjunct professor of engineering physics at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, and in general is one of the leading consultants, one of the leading authorities on space travel, and most particularly upon the moon and the utilization of what is available to us on the moon. I've mentioned helium-3. You've written some about that. What is it as an element, and why don't we just mine it down here?
Well, the first thing I have to say is that my wife and I, for many years, have enjoyed watching the Cubbies and the White Sox in spring training down in Tucson. It's one of our favorite times of the year to go down there and watch the teams play. Helium, I just heard an ad for the Cubbies.
Yes, indeed.
Helium-3 is a light isotope of helium that, if it was in significant abundance here on Earth, would almost certainly be the primary area of research for the development of fusion electrical power systems. It is not abundant on Earth. Recently, there's been enough for research, but even that has been jeopardized by events that we can talk about later if you're interested. But helium-3 is a nearly ideal fuel for fusion reactors once they're developed. For one thing, the capital costs of building a fusion plant with utilizing helium-3 are much lower than that of other fusion systems, particularly one that burns two heavy isotopes of hydrogen, deuterium and tritium. But more importantly, you do not produce any radioactivity when you fuse helium-3 with itself, and no radioactive waste, and that you can convert the products of the fusion process, namely positively charged protons, directly to electricity. It just has many, many advantages over almost any other fusion or fission power system. I think we're going to need both in the future, but nevertheless, helium-3 looks very, very attractive.
And there's loads
of nearest source of helium-3 is the moon.
Up there on the moon. Was it you who proposed that we ought to establish particularly a station in a location, namely a lunar outpost on the rim of the Shackleton crater near the moon's south pole?
That was a notional objective for the Constellation program, and still is, in order to have something to design to. That's one of the big things missing from the Obama plan, is it doesn't have any direction for all of this effort that he has proposed.
Well, it points you to Mars and maybe an asteroid on the way.
Well, but it's just maybe. And
yes.
We're going to make a decision on a type of launch vehicle in 2015. It's all promises without any substance to them. And that's what's got so many people concerned, in addition to the fact that basically he has said the United States is going to leave the moon to other nations, and most particularly China.
Yeah.
And that would, not just because of the resources and the science that we won't be doing, but because of the impression that leaves in the rest of the world.
What impression would that be?
Very negative. The United States is withdrawn from competition on the planet. And a lot of people don't like the word competition, but we are in a competition to protect liberty on this planet, and we have to do it in many different ways and many different venues. And one of those venues is space. It would be as if the United States decided 200 years ago to abandon its Navy. Because in 200 years ago, and for the last two centuries, the oceans have been the place where the competition between free and non-free nations has taken place. Now that competition is reaching into space, and we just can't abandon it. Some people may not like competition, but we don't have a choice.
You used the term earlier of geopolitical advantage that we would be giving up if we did not go back to the moon. When you speak of geopolitics, are you also suggesting or just hinting that maybe the coming mode of warfare does involve space, and if we're not on the moon, we are at a disadvantage?
No, I'm not saying that. I don't think the moon relates directly to military advantages now. Indirectly, the technology, the energy availability to the United States economy, and those kind of things, yeah, those are important to our national security and a very important part of it. What I'm talking about is the psychological loss that we would suffer if we abandon deep space. And the president's proposals basically leave us in a position where we're abandoning deep space, in spite of the fact that he is... made some pie-in-the-sky statements about Mars. Technically, we don't know how to do Mars. We don't know how to land there. We don't know the biomedical aspects of getting there. And the moon is the fastest way to learn these things, at the same time developing a generation of young people who can do it, several generations of young people who can work in deep space, as well as get the technology base necessary in order to make Mars possible.
So I think what you're saying is we'll get to Mars sooner if we go back to the moon to begin with.
There's no question about it. No question about it. And everybody who has any history of consideration of these matters feels that way. The Obama administration and the leadership of NASA today do not have that background of experience in to understand how you really can get things done in this new ocean of space.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned
they're
that.
They're dreaming of a world that just doesn't exist.
But I'm glad you mentioned NASA, because that's what I was about to ask you about. This plan supposedly comes from NASA and is given to the president by the advisory groups in NASA.
No. It comes from one person in NASA, as I understand it.
Who is
that? For the most part, that's the deputy administrator. And it really comes out of the White House, and I think it comes out of the atmosphere the president has created, that America should not be first.
Uh-huh.
That we should be second best, that we've been first too long. I think the president envisions an America that I can't say he doesn't love, but it's America that never has existed in the past, and I feel very strongly should not exist in the future. And that's one where we basically have given up our leadership in many different fields, economic, social, technological, and military, to other nations. And that would be a disaster, in my opinion.
Well, of course, the president, in talking about foreign affairs and foreign policy and America's role in history over the last 100 or years or more, has suggested that we've been a bit too omnipresent and a bit too domineering, and we haven't been sensitive to the needs of other nations.
Well, we have been a global power for our existence, most of our existence, certainly since the end of the Civil War, and actually even before that, under President Polk and after the Mexican War, we became a global power because we were a continental power. And we have to realize that has meant we protected liberty in this country and therefore for humankind in general. If we don't do it, there's nobody else out there that's going to do it. Certainly China's not going to protect liberty. Russia is not going to protect liberty. If you can name me any group of nations that has the capability to do what the United States has done for the last two centuries, then I'd be happy to revise that argument. But I don't know it. I think I'm enough of a student of history to know what role the United States has played over the last two centuries and has to continue to play in the future if liberty is going to be protected on this planet.
Well, you speak very strongly and very effectively on these matters. I am curious, in that letter to the president, you had some 20 or more other signers. Do you think that the kinds of views you're expressing now are broadly shared, if only in the major thrust of the argument, are broadly shared in the space community, so to speak?
I would say so, but I can't speak for anybody other than myself. It'd be my guess that many would share these opinions and concerns about the direction the president is taking the United States, not only in space, but in foreign and domestic policy.
You've given a few thoughts, expressed a few thoughts about just how he came to the views that he seems to be acting upon, or how he developed the attitude which seems to somehow motivate not only his space policy, but his foreign policy generally. We are about to pause to do what we can to buoy up capitalism. But first, we take a quick newscast and a few commercials, and then directly back to Senator Harrison Schmidt, who was talking with us from Madison, Wisconsin. You've taught there on and off over recent years, haven't you?
Yes, I've been associated with the engineering department here since 1986. So, and we taught from 1996 to 2004, we taught a course here, but that has not been taught recently.
Well, directly back to Harrison Schmidt after this pause for an update on the news. For that, to the WGN Newsroom and Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
The last time human beings walked on the moon was 1972. One of those two human beings was Harrison Schmidt, who's with us tonight in this discussion of the new presidential initiative, or the new presidential announcement, about changes in our basic program in space in coming decades. Harrison Schmidt, of course, after that went on to be a member of the U.S. Senate for one full six-year term, and has been a major consultant and teacher and general commentator in the broad realm of space engineering. We welcome your calls to him. We're opening the phones at this instant. The number, of course, as ever, is 312, then 591-7200. 312-591-7200. If you want to reach us from a long distance, listening on the Internet in Australia or in Japan or in Malaysia or wherever, particularly out on the Western Rim where it's midday at the moment, on the Pacific Rim, I should have said, then the email address, extension720@wgnradio.com, extension720@wgnradio.com, or 312-591-7200. I was suggesting a few minutes ago that, in a way, you're taking the Bible seriously when it says, by their works shall you know them. You can read backwards from the positions that people take and the programs they pursue and the enthusiasms that they carry forward. You can read backwards to some thoughts, at least, about how they're constructed and what shaped them and what basic attitudes move them into the public sphere. And you've been speculating a bit about Barack Obama in that way. You want to share that speculation?
Well, when one does not have personal experience with the life history of a person, you have to look at what they have said and what they have done in order to draw some conclusions. So, at least I don't think we should sit around and just take for granted any presence, and I certainly never have and don't intend to, and that includes Republicans as well as Democrats. And in the case of President Obama, you see a history of disrespect, really, for the Constitution, no interest in the Constitution as it was intended to be interpreted. You see a disrespect for America's role in protecting freedom around the world, the arrogance that he claimed that we had when he was traveling in Europe. You see a disrespect for traditional allies, whether it's the British or the Israelis or a democratic government in Honduras or Ecuador. What's going on in Ecuador, not a democratic government, but it's just many, many different indications. The recent pronouncements on nuclear policy, the abandonment of Poland and the Czech Republic relative to missile defense. You're just seeing many, many different indications that the president does not like what America has been in the past and wants to change it into something that he would like and would conceivably love. I just don't agree with that. And many people increasingly, I think, are beginning to understand that the president, when he says change, he means it. He means to change America entirely from what it has stood for in the past. Now, we've had creeping socialism for a long time, but nothing at the magnitude that we have seen over the last year.
Abandonment seems to be the key word here. But we abandoned some allies, and you're saying we're abandoning our necessary mission in space.
That's correct. It's abandoning the mission of the United States of America in its role in the world, and that has included space, unfortunately, now.
I'm sure that in the White House, if they were to respond, one thing that would come up immediately is the very, very high cost of further moon missions and establishment of bases on the moon and so on. But these are hard times. We've got to find some way to economize.
Well, but they've undercut their own argument because they're willing to put more money in NASA. They just don't want to do the things that are important to the country. And that argument would not hold any water. And in fact, the NASA is not a very, very high-cost program compared to almost anything else the government is doing. It is low-cost, and certainly compared to the economic disaster that's been foisted on the country now over the last year, including the last year of the Bush administration. I'm not going to absolve President Bush and his advisors of the blame for what's happened economically in this country, at least over that period of time. The last term of the president had a lot to criticize of President Bush. But in the case of, it's just continued and gotten progressively worse and accelerated under President Obama and the current Congress.
Senator Schmidt, lots of our listeners are clamoring to talk with you, and we're going to go directly to the phones.
Sure.
312-591-7200. If you're trying to reach us right now, you're hitting the busy signal, but don't be totally discouraged. Call again, try again, directly after we say goodnight to the first caller. And here is that first caller. Dennis has reached us at WGN Radio. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mr. Milt. Senator.
Yes, sir.
Listening to your tone, I'm just kind of curious. How do you see space exploration? Is that the sole responsibility of any one country? Does any one country own this Earth or space?
No. No. I am speaking of a role that the United States of America has to be fully competitive in that ocean of space. There is absolutely no wrong, nothing that I would argue with relative to cooperation with other nations. We've done it in the past. There's no reason not to continue to do that. It's just that we have to have a dominant presence in order to have that kind of cooperation with other countries and to continue use space, to employ space in the defense of freedom. No, it is not solely either by treaty or by philosophy an arena for the United States alone.
Okay, I'm glad you kind of answered that, because from your tone, I'm getting the impression that you have this kind of cosmological imperialistic idea that we must be the forerunner. Wouldn't you think it would be much cheaper for all nations to come together technologically and monetarily to do space exploration?
Only in specific instances does that work. If you try to do it as a general rule, you have no centralized management that can operate efficiently. All you have to do is look at the inefficiencies of the United Nations to see that happening.
But you're saying that. But my argument is that if you're going to go the sole route of being the dominant force in space, what's telling the other countries is that, here we go again, America is at the forefront. Pretty soon you're going to use space as a convenient way to control this planet.
Sir, we've heard that, and it's an interesting point.
The United States has never tried to use space to control the planet, and that accusation holds no water. And in fact, with the Constellation program, as it was ramping up, Europe was beginning to increasingly join in cooperation. They realized that that is the best way to meet their aims in space, is to cooperate with the country that could provide the infrastructure the basic rocketry and spacecraft that could go into space, and they would not have to do that, and they could work as our partners in this. Mike Griffin and the particularly had put together a tremendous cooperative effort with Europe, which now is going to go by the wayside.
Our thanks to the caller for an interesting contribution, and directly to another. John has joined us at WGN. Good evening.
Hi. Good evening. My question is regarding, in reference to what he said about energy. I was wondering, first of all, how much of the government budget is the space program? And if you put it on hold and moved all that money to explore hydrogen, wind, and all the nuclear, you know, all the other energy things they say they can do, how much would that expedite that plan into fruition?
It would hardly have any impact whatsoever. The NASA. I'm sorry, we're getting some.
Well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that line, but please go ahead, Senator.
Well, the NASA budget is a fraction of 1% of the federal. It's even less than that now with the way the federal spending has gone over the last year. And so it would, from a proportional point of view, not have much impact, and certainly relative to what the Department of Energy is spending in these areas, it would not have any great impact. Now, having said that, I ran NASA's energy programs back in the 70s, and we did move to apply Apollo-era technologies to a variety of energy issues of that time. So the technology contribution that sort of automatically appears when you work in space is very, very important relative to energy. Some engineers would argue that space flight is basically learning how to convert energy from one form to another, and at high efficiency, and all of that applies directly back into these other areas. Now, there are, I think, far greater issues relative to domestic energy than anything NASA can contribute to, but NASA could contribute, as this gentleman has implied, in some ways, but it does it automatically through the development of technologies for other major national purposes.
Our last round of commercials is impending, and then directly back to the phones, 312-591-7200.
You're listening to Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
And we return to Harrison Schmitt, the last man, well, the last of two men to walk on the moon way back in 1972. And here is Peter, who joins us at WGN. Good evening, sir.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to ask the Senator, since there's been such a lapse in the amount of years that's gone by since people gone on the moon, obviously you said there were resources that could benefit the United States as well as the Earth as a whole. Does he not understand, or is there anybody that gives him the pros and cons of his decisions before he publicly announces them and doesn't realize the impact of the money that can bring the United States as well as the world as far as the future holds?
No idea how policy is made in this White House, or probably in any White House, not having been there. So I really can't answer that part of the question. And, in fact, I would not want the government to be involved in the commercialization of lunar helium-3 resources. I don't think the taxpayer should do that if, indeed, as I feel, investors can carry that load once it's been demonstrated that this is a viable technology for the production of commercial electrical power. The government's role in space, I think, is to, in the very simplest terms, show the flag and lead other nations as partners in the gradual settlement of space, the moon as well as Mars. I don't think the government should undertake the commercial development of helium-3 fusion. Because it can't. It wouldn't be commercial then. It would be subsidized. That's the problem with the Obama plan to subsidize launches somehow in the private sector. But back to the energy question, as long as the private sector and private investors can be persuaded that this is something worth the risk of their investment capital, then that's the way it ought to be done. It would be as if you would ask the government to take over all the communication satellites. Well, there's absolutely no reason for the taxpayer to be operating communication satellites, because the private sector can do that and provide that service far better and more cheaply than it could ever be done by the government.
We'll go directly to the next caller, and that is Brett. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Yes. I have a question. Oh, actually, I'd like to say you had a lot of guts after Apollo 13 to go back to a mission to the moon. That was pretty amazing.
Well, you know, in my world, of that part of my world, you learn from the actions. Yeah, you learn from the actions. You learn from the mistakes. And the spacecraft that we flew after Apollo 13 was a much better and much lower risk spacecraft than Apollo 13, because we learned from that accident.
I need to read you an email I've got from a regular listener in Australia. This is Mike in Sydney, who sometimes communicates with us, and he says, Australia has a flawed cultural phenomenon known as the, quote, tail poppy syndrome, whereby high achievers are cut down so as to be kept humble and on equal standing with, quote, the rest. The result is that actors, writers, entrepreneurs, inventors, magnates, and others who excel in their field try with all their might to successfully immigrate to America. If President Obama's vision for a humbled, non-exceptional America is attained, where else is there to go? Very strange times. Similar in tone to Rome's latter-day Caesars, who saw themselves as chaperoning the empire's inevitable decline.
I can't argue with my Australian friend, and
you think
not that I know
him,
but I know a lot of Australians, and they certainly, the ones I know, believe very strongly in America and America's role in the world.
Here we go to another caller. Tony has joined us. Good evening.
Hey, good evening. Here's my view. I think that Obama and his administration are on the definite wrong track here, from the perspective that, historically speaking, all of the greatest technological advances, at least in my lifetime, and I'm in my mid-50s, have really truly come from the space program. Now, I'm sure there's, you know, other things that have come along, you know, polio vaccines and, you know, other medical breakthroughs, and, you know, of course, there's the Bill Gateses of the world and, you know, Apple and what have you. But I think, by and large, all of the great minds, you know, have come together to, you know, get into space exploration. And we lag so far behind educationally of all of these other Asian nations and other nations around the country. I mean, what is to spark the imagination other than, you know, astronomy and or space, you know, for the young people of, you know, our country?
You make a very important point about the role that the idea of space plays in education. I wish that was the only problem in our education system, but it certainly is one, is that we need to always provide stimulation of new ideas and adventure, I think, to young people. That's people forget that Apollo was a program of young people. Most of the people who the 450,000 Americans that were part of Apollo were in their 20s. Not in their 30s or 40s. The managers were, but not the people who really made it happen. You bring up education, and that could be, Milt, another show entirely. Deeply involved in that through the years, and until we find a way to get parental choice back in the education system and get rid of the dominance of the educational unions, I don't see much hope for the education system in the United States.
One reason that I actually brought this up is, and other than being fascinated by the topic down through the years, is, you know, there's a young man who's a senior at a high school here in Atlanta, and he wants to go. He is actually an immigrant from Vietnam, And his goal is to go to Georgia Tech and study aerospace engineering. And what besides him being interested in aerospace engineering, and this is his vocation, he wants to be able to provide for his family that still lives back there in Vietnam. I mean, what is wrong with us, you know, attracting all of the best and brilliant minds, whether they're here on U.S. soil or in any other country, to come here and help us further, you know, the greatness of this particular country? We were built on, you know, immigration.
Well put, sir. We're almost out of time, so let's get a quick response from Senator Schmidt.
Well, we're a nation of immigrants, we have benefited from that in many, many different ways. And one way is that it made us unique. The people who came here, either voluntarily or involuntarily, and then benefited from being here, brought ambition and courage and willing to compete and to better their lives, everything. And they were the people who decided to do that, not the ones who decided to stay and bear whatever oppression they might have had before. A very important part of the American character, I think.
Harrison Schmidt, in just the 1 minute that's left, can I give you an impossible challenge? Do futurological speculation. 100 years from now, what will have been accomplished in the human move out into space?
Well, I tend to be an optimist. I think this is a temporary aberration that we're running against with the Obama administration, and that in the long run, human beings as well, and particularly Americans, are going to settle the moon and settle Mars. And 100 years from now, my goodness, we will probably have figured out how to actually do warp speed, and we may be on our way to a planetary system we found around another star.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us. We've tried to get together in studio with you in the past, and our schedules haven't worked out exactly, but I'm looking forward to your being here whenever you can manage it.
Well, I look forward to it, too, and we'll work it some way. Now I'm a board of the Heartland Institute.
I know.
So I'm coming into Chicago every once in a while, and we'll figure it out.
And I was at a board meeting for another organization with Joe Bast just this afternoon, as a matter of fact.
Well, it's a great group, and people in Chicago, if they aren't aware of this fine organization, they should become aware of it.
Thanks again for joining us. Hope to see you soon.
Take care, Mel.
Good
Thank
night.
You.